So this is the third side of the 15th session, session 15, August 28, 2006. Now, talking about Warhol and the power of his imagery, the fact that he was expressing the trend caused by the new television environment, turning the old movie radio environment into art form, that's McLuhan's principle or law, he presented the images of the old mechanical Hollywood, movie and radio, as sequentially presented, repeating images with different colorations. But the point is that he was highlighting the cultural values of a previous environment. That's what McLuhan means, turning the old environment into a repository of spiritual values. But it was McLuhan who said that Warhol was just merging with the latest effect. He made visible what was the latest effect, whereas McLuhan would say that Warhol was not aware of the causes of why his art had such a strong resonance. So McLuhan would say that Warhol merged with the tribal environment, the new mass media environment, sensitive to shifts and presented them. But since it was...
Well, he must have been aware that he had perfect pitch if he was, you know, if he was creating art that resonated with the present.
He may not have known that he had perfect pitch. He just did it, and then it was successful. Mm. He may not have known why it was popular, because it was expressing...
Well, he had a successful career for like 30 years. He must have known what he was doing. It wasn't hit or miss with him.
No, you have to realize, no. In 63, 64, when he's presenting his art, I think the Campbell Soup Can... Subcan is around 63, 64. He's showing pictures of, I've seen these over and over here in New York in various retrospectives. I think the electric chair image, the Jackie Kennedy image, they're about 62, 63. And Elvis is in there. Now, at that point, he is part of the counterculture. He's just beginning. He's not a big artist yet. He's hanging out with junkies. He's hanging out with Dylan's girlfriend at the song... like the Rolling Stones about Evie, whatever her name was, Evie Sedgwick, Edie. That movie Chow Manhattan about Edie. So Edie was a girl who was a model who was caught between the Warhol, what some would say, junkie gay world and the Bob Dylan rock world. And when Dylan sings Like a Rolling Stone, he used the phrase, you're Napoleon in rags. That refers to Bob Dylan. And Warhol and them were just scrounging along, getting...
That refers to Warhol, Bob Dylan singing about Warhol?
Yeah, Napoleon in rags.
Mm-hmm.
Warhol you move along to 1969, he's starts creating Interview Magazine. And Interview Magazine is when he starts to get a little bit more high society recognition. He's got counterculture avant-garde recognition with his films and that in the middle 60s, and he's a sensation. But he is not he's not as wealthy as he's going to become, and he becomes an archetype by the mid-70s and that. But the period of making these paintings, silkscreen paintings, is before he's big. He makes a splash with them, and people respond to them, but it doesn't, really archetypalize Warhol till later. The thing is that they are going to be archetypalize his art because it expresses an unconscious trend that people are feeling but aren't aware of. If they got the ugly new TV environment, satellite environment, creating its effects in the early 60s, which people will not want to acknowledge, then they will go back to a previous media environment and start looking at them, the images from them, which is Warhol and others, pop art, with a new appreciation or nostalgia. It's almost like a camp. And but they're not aware of the causes of the situation. And McLuhan, being both a scientist and artist in the new sense, is stating the causes of the fascination for pop art, op art, mini art, and funk art. You know, he's mm-hmm. explaining the ground. Baudrillard goes on later to write about this is the beginning of the commodification of art and the death of art.
Mm-hmm. So in some cases, artists were like Monet in his pointillist style, he sort of predicted TV.
Surratt.
Yeah, so some artists sort of predicted the newer technology coming in, but Warhol was more doing retrospective.
Yeah, well, McLuhan writes in 1960, before Warhol, that the role of art of preparing people for technological effects that are coming down the pike with new environments, giving them a couple decades warning, that role is obsolesced by the 50s because the arts can't keep up with the paces of technological change and the effects of image content, which become temporary word-makes-a-market environments themselves. I have this. You ever heard that song, The World's on Fire, Billy Joel, about fire?
Yeah.
Okay, got that the other day. Let's just see if I can find it and read it to you. This is an example of the rapid changing of environments on the image level, which is what you have, you know, from 57 on. Okay, where is it here? Okay, it's called We Didn't Start the Fire. You remember that song?
Yeah, I sure do.
Here are the lyrics. Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio, Joe McCarthy, Richard Nixon, Studebaker, television, North Korea, South Korea, Marilyn Monroe, Rosenberg's, H-Bomb, Sugar Ray, Phantom Jam, Brando, The King and I, and The Catcher in the Rye, Eisenhower, vaccine, England's Got a New Queen, Marciano, Liberace, Santayana, Goodbye. Chorus, we didn't start the fire, it was always burning since the world's been turning. We didn't start the fire, no, we didn't light it, but we tried to fight it. Joseph Stalin, Malenkov, Nasser and Prokofiev, Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc, Roy Cohen, Juan Perón, Toscanini, Dacron, Dien Bien Phu, and Rock Around the Clock. Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's Got a Winning Team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Princess Grace, Peyton Place, Trouble in the Suez. Then he does the chorus again. Then Little Rock, Pasternak, Mickey Mantle, Kerouac, Sputnik, Chew and Lie, Bridge on the River Kwai, Lebanon, Charles de Gaulle, California Baseball, Stark Weather, Homicide, Children of Thalidomide, Buddy Holly, Ben Hur, Space Monkey, Mafia, Hula Hoops, Castro, Edsel is a No-Go, U2, Syngman Rhee, Paola and Kennedy, Chubby Checker, Psycho, Belgians in the Congo. Then the chorus then continues. Hemingway, Eichmann, Stranger in a Strange Land, Dylan, Berlin, Bay of Pigs Invasion, Lawrence of Arabia, British Beatlemania, Ole Miss, John Glenn, Liston Beats Patterson, Pope Paul, Malcolm X, British politician sex, JFK, Blown Away, What Else Do I Have to Say? Chorus. And Birth Control, Ho Chi Minh, Richard Nixon, Back Again, Moonshot, Woodstock, Watergate, Punk Rock, Begin, Reagan, Palestine, Terror on the Airline, Ayatollahs in Iran, Russians in Afghanistan, Wheel of Fortune, Sally Ride, Heavy Metal, Suicide, Foreign Debts, Homeless Vets, AIDS, Crack, Bernie Getz, Hyperdermics on the Shores, China's Under Martial Law, Rock and Roller, Cola Wars, I Can't Take It Anymore. We didn't start the fire, but when we are gone, we'll still burn on and on and on and on. So, there's that song, right? Look at all the environments that are evoked by those words. Image environments and 200 years of experience there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's the media environment. That's what's molding people. How can art keep up with that? How can image art, painting art, music art keep up with that? All they can do is reflect the rhythms as is happening. So you don't have the role of art as anti-environment anymore at this point. So what is the anti-environment? So McLuhan proposes a new anti-environment. He thinks he solved that question of how to elicit creativity in a world over-creative, which creative both destroys and proliferates. So I think the next quote gets into that. So we got on to Warhol. I just want to say that he had a hit, you know, just like the Beatles. Are they artists? Well, they had a hit. Their rhythms resonated with the felt rhythms of the early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Their image, it's like McLuhan
said. They mutated with the flux.
Yeah.
The flux evoked them.
Mm. The flux evoked them. And knowing the constituents of the flux is the role of the tetrad manager or the ones who are managing the mixed corporate media environment.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is allowing things to happen. which later becomes known as the chaos theory, theory of chaos. But let's look at the notion of happen and read the next quote. So I just wanted to say, let's just read the last two quotes from Camp again. First one from page 188 of Cliched Archetype. Camp is a kind of dropoutism resulting from the new electric environment. All the earlier forms go into quotes, as it were, when they have this new world to encompass them. It's like, to make a song, Billy Joel just quotes all these previous image environments, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the second quote, camp is not a form of retrieval, but rather simply rearview mirror nostalgia. It's interesting, he says there's not a form of retrieval. It is a retrieval, I think the way McLuhan would mean it, is a whole environment is retrieved. Whole sensibility, not just a passing trend of a bunch of people in New York putting on costumes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or even the women's lib.
Well, can you even have retrievals when there's no unconscious?
That's why it's a cliche probe. Now we've hit on why the new environment is a cliche probe. It's retrieval, but it's not retrieval when all times are happening. So it's a present cliche probing. Right?
Yeah.
That's his new term for something that's not a retrieval.
Yeah, well, that starts to clear it up a bit.
Yeah, good. We've serendipitously fell into that. Camp is not a form of retrieval, but rather simply rearview mirror nostalgia. Now, women's lib is maybe more of a retrieval than camp, because that's a major sociological form affecting people all over the world, but it's made possible by the new mobility the electric environment, digital environment creates. Right,
mm-hmm.
It's a response to the right hemisphere effect. Also, the general fact that the modern media environment requires many more people to be employees. So you got to harness the female element of the population to fill in software jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So camp is not a form, this is from page 189 of Cliched Archetype, camp is not a form of retrieval, but rather simply rearview mirror nostalgia. It is not a new service environment or cliché. You see, it's not a new service environment. See, new or cliche. New is cliche there, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is not a new service environment or cliche, same thing, but a means of escaping into the gingerbread world of mom and nursery. And a lot of people who knew the Warhol scene, the factory scene, considered it a gingerbread world of mom and nursery. They just were all speed freaks hanging out, like hippie communes. A nostalgia for old comfortable protective values in an environment that was turning into a phenomenon that we will express in the next quote.
Yeah.
Which is from Cliché Archetype also.
Had an air of adolescent rebellion, would you say?
Yeah. It's very hard to grow up because to be mature was obsolete when humans were superseded by the increasingly android meme environment.
Yeah. And you really notice, I mean, when I look back at pictures when my dad was a teenager, you look at photographs of people back then, and they look like mature adults.
Yeah.
And then by the time, I'm not sure I'm a mature adult yet, and I'm 50.
Yeah. I know what you mean. Okay, so this is from the book Cliched Archetype, page 198. Scott will read us the quote in a nice stumbling manner so that you can take it in.
As an art form, the happening does not so much address the audience as include the audience. It expects the audience to immerse itself in the, quote, destructive element, as it were. At various times in the history of theater, the audience has been included in the show to a considerable degree. In the newspaper, it's decidedly the audience that is the show. In such a large degree, in large degree, is the nature of language. It's a happening that includes all publics and all past perceptions in an inclusive Donnybrook of coincidences and adjustments. Once Joyce discovered language in this way, he knew he had found out the means to transform the entire human community into a workforce for the artist. Gerd Stern and the other poets of the happening are delighted to discover that all human artifacts are available as dramatis personae, that's italicized, in their theater. It is the same discovery of the, quote, world that has created camp.
Yeah, the discovery of the world as something you can include in your theater performance, known as a happening, is the same thing of, it's putting media in quotes, like camp puts things in quotes. But he's saying the happening does have resonance with what was going on in the world in general. It's just that the newspaper already was a happening, where the audience is the show. In a happening, the audience becomes part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And the happenings were created by some of the pop artists in that early period in the late 50s, early 60s. So I'm going to read that again. As an art form, the happening does not so much address the audience as include the audience. There's no divisions under the satellite conditions. If everybody is crew and there are no spectators, then there's no theater. There's no audience. It expects the audience, the happening expects the audience to immerse itself in the destructive element, as it were, destructive element in quotes. At various times in the history of the theater, the audience has been included in the show to a considerable degree. In the newspaper, it is decidedly the audience that is the show, not just included. Such, in large degree, is the nature of language. So language includes people. It is a happening, so language is a happening that includes all publics and all past perceptions in an inclusive Donnybrook, a violent fight, of coincidences and adjustments. Once Joyce discovered language in this way, he knew he had found out the means to transform the entire human community into a workforce for the artist. You know, you got everybody working to figure out what fitting his wake meant. Gerd Stern and the other poets of the happening are delighted to discover that all human artifacts, separate artifacts, I would say, are available as dramatis personae in their theater. It is the same discovery of the world that has created camp. All these things, all the Warhol world, the pop art, the camp world, the happening world, all that scene of the 60s was largely putting old artifacts, any artifact, in quotes, and including the audience, like Warhol would welcome anybody to come and get a audition, get a film screen. So it's all anticipated by Finnegan's Wake, which is a happening of media environments and languages, and he has the character HCE, Here Comes Everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the world. So the happening is approximating the mixed corporate media dance of the satellite effect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you got any questions on any of the or statements?
No.
Nothing? It's all pretty obvious.
Yeah. Well, I might have a question, but let's just continue.
Okay, so we've been doing the relationship of cliché to archetype, which is a pattern that McClellan's working with after understanding media. Media is a book dealing with artifacts and their environments. As he says in this last quote, these human artifacts have become dramatis personae or figures in the global theater. Well, McLuhan took media environments, separate media environments, and wrote a history of them as a form of performance by him. But then he had to deal with the world that was leading to the digital android meme, the imploded mixed media world where there was no distinction between anything. And so he had to come up with the new drama of cognition, which mimed the original human drama of cognition, where there were no boundaries. So that's a very primitive world where there are no boundaries. The word McKenna celebrates, Terence McKenna, and he saw that the dialectic that could set up a way of approaching this, create an art form that would, an anti-environment, that would give a different kind of creativity in response to the explosive amount of creativity in the cliché archetype world. He came up with the dialectic between cliché and archetype, which are interchangeable and difficult to follow if you don't take time to tease it out,
mm-hmm.
which we've just done over the last two or three tape sessions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's a question. At various times in the history of theater, the audience has been included in the show to a considerable degree. In the newspaper, it is decidedly the audience that is the show. Well, newspaper comes before satellite, and I don't get his meaning there, because it looks to me like the newspaper's the show and the audience is enjoying the newspaper, but he's saying that the audience is the show with the newspaper.
Yeah, and he's talking about the newspaper under telegraph conditions, 100 years, you know, 1850, 60, 1870, 1880.
Uh-huh.
And the audience is the show. That's the beginning of what he calls the electronic global village tribal involvement under electric conditions with the telegraph. Now, what happens when the satellite comes in and turns all the previous media environments into actors themselves? Then the human activity known as theater becomes marginalized, and it resonates with the collective effect of all media inside the satellite environment. Remember, it's media environments that are the show in the satellite environment. So the little chemical body, the human body, gets to go down to the east, lower east side of New York City and participate in happenings. This is a miming on a minuscule level of the human body's interaction with the world of theater. So the world of theater has been changed by the satellite effect, just as many media environments, all of them have been changed. So we see the registration of the satellite effect on major media in the little art world or the theater world. The phenomenon of the happening is retrieved for human bodies. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And that's retrieving, you could say, the effect of the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought they were doing art, but they're actually doing the newspaper, which was an old medium in the new satellite environment.
Mm-hmm.
So you see the distinction I'm making?
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about newspaper under satellite conditions.
Yeah. No. The art world or theater world or avant-garde counterculture world is bringing chemical bodies onto the stage, which is a happening environment, which it really doesn't have a stage, just includes everybody who shows up. That is an effect on theater and has a resonance because it resonates with the larger effect of huge media environments becoming the actors inside the theater environment.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out that the happening, bringing in chemical bodies as part of the show, was already done 80 years before by the newspaper medium.
Mm.
But the newspaper medium itself was turned into a meme, an afterimage, inside the satellite effect. McLuhan, I remember, wrote in the 60s that the newspaper gave up being an adversarial, editorial counter-environment to the society by the 60s and merged with its audience and then started to put on the opinions of its audience.
Mm-hmm.
For most people, that became extreme in the 80s with the Reagan era. There were books written about how the media was totally controlled by the White House. But that was just the anemic newspaper art form just trying to remain relevant. So it would put on and mirror the audience rather than be a confrontational anti-environment as it was in the 150 years before.
Mm-hmm. So this question might be redundant based on what we've already covered here, but I just wanted a little more clarification. As an art form, the happening does not so much address the audience as include the audience. It expects the audience to immerse itself in the destructive element, and that's in quotes, destructive element. And what's the reference to the destructive element?
The destructive element is the breakdown of the barrier between the audience and the spectator in the audience and the actors in the traditional theater.
Oh, okay.
That's one of it. It's also appeared to be a very messy environment. It wasn't your traditional theater. It was a chaotic environment. And so it was emphasizing the, quotes, chaos or, quote, destructive element of the larger satellite effect.
Mm-hmm.
So that McLuhan felt that pointing out the causes and effects was the role of the serious artist, which he considered himself, or the serious scientist. And he didn't see anybody else doing it.
Mm-hmm. So Warhol was riding the wave of the effects.
Yes.
And McLuhan was talking about how the wave was getting generated.
Yes. And McLuhan covered all aspects of media and their audiences. You know, he wasn't just looking at the New York art world.
Mm-hmm.
He could write about the New York art world, but he wrote about things happening all over the globe.
Right, because he saw it as all being part of the theater.
Yeah.
Or the happening.
The global theater, right.
It is a happening that includes all publics, all past perceptions in an inclusive Donnybrook of coincidences and adjustments. What's the reference to Donnybrook? I keep saying Donnybrook, but what's the reference to Donnybrook?
I think it's an Irish term for a fight or a place where a fight took place, and that's leading into Joyce.
Of coincidences and adjustments.
like Donnybrook is a slang word in British culture, I think, for a fight. There was a Donnybrook broke out, you know?
Uh-huh.
But he's got to capitalize here, so maybe it was an actual place where the slang word came from.
Mm.
And so coincidences and adjustments is the sensory ratio struggling to adapt to the new effects.
Mm. Okay.
Which brings in your synchronicity, coincidences.
Right.
So more and more people would get coincidences and what they would call synchronicity in the 70s and 80s and 90s as this happening intensified.
Mm-hmm.
The collective happening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, McLuhan, right when happenings were happening, McLuhan said, well, we've already got a happening going on in the average suburban living room with television.
Mm-hmm.
That was a new environment with no distinction between an audience and actors. The merged effect of the mosaic tactile image of the TV.
Mm-hmm.
So he would see, you know, Warhol and the artists who did the happenings as effects within the world of capital A art. But he would also be looking at the effects in hockey,
mm-hmm.
and in wars in Vietnam and what was happening in academia or student sit-ins, all the phenomena.
Once Joyce discovered language in this way, he knew he had found out the means to transform the entire human community into a workforce for the artist.
Now, remember when I was saying the electric environment turns everybody into a worker, because there's so many new functions that have to be dealt with in the expanded economy of electronic society.
Mm-hmm.
That's why women had to be taken out of the suburb family unit and brought into the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
So Joyce mimed that effect. Mm. By making everybody become a workforce for his book, Finnegan's Wake, which was the whole world was welcome to analyze and figure out what they wanted to see in it.
Mm-hmm.
So he mimed the electric environment. He transformed the entire human community into a workforce for the artist. So it's a anti-environment set up by Joyce representing the Western individual talent tradition, the individual creative genius, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which is already being, you know, subsumed by his time, and by the time you get into the 1560s, I mean, one of the themes that Warhol and them dealt with retrieving Duchamp and Dada was the idea of what was really creative genius, what was creative originality, was there really originality?
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard for the old tradition of the individual artist to stand out. Now, Wyndham Lewis wrestled with that program and that meme all his life.
Yeah.
Well, Joyce too in Pound.
Wasn't Duchamp sort of famous for trying to break down the walls between art and in the environment?
Yep, that's what he was known for. I mean, he can be considered as significant in the art world as Joyce is in the literary world.
Mm-hmm. Gerd, Stern, and other poets of the happening are delighted to discover that all human artifacts are available as dramatis personae in their theater. Now, is he saying that Gerd Stern is consciously aware of this fact, or he's just saying that he should be happy?
No, he's saying they are delighted. They're not aware of the collective causes. Now, I know Gerd Stern. He met Marsh McLuhan in early 1964 at a happening up in Vancouver, and they became friends and corresponded. And Gerd Stern had fortunately gotten a copy of Understanding Media. No, McLuhan's report for the for the American government educational department in 1960 that John Cage had, and Gerd knew John, and John gave Gerd the thing, so he read it, and he was interested in McLuhan in 63, and he had an opportunity to meet him in 64. And there's a famous story that Gerd presented his happening, and then Marshall came up to him after and said, Gerd, this is all fine and dandy, but what's this got to do with me? And most people found that absurd because they thought McLuhan was promoting these kind of happenings, that he saw them as significant, but no one knew that McLuhan saw them as effects, and that they didn't necessarily lead to understand the causes, since he was never understood himself. So,
mm-hmm.
So Gerd, I've talked to him about these issues. He lives here in New York City. They're asking, okay, Gerd Stern are delighted to discover that all human artifacts are available as figures. In other words, you put on a show and you have the radio and the chair and various artifacts as part of the actors on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
They're the dramatis personae in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
The breaking down of walls between artifacts, audience, and actors.
Mm-hmm.
They're delighted, and that means they have a new enthusiasm. But McLuhan was interested in what caused those enthusiasms, and we come back to the first quote that we started with today, page 25 at the bottom. Any movement of appetite within the labyrinth of cognition is a minotaur which must be slain by the hero artist. In the tradition of the hero artist, you're going to slay what causes people to be delighted.
Mm-hmm.
Anything which interferes with cognition, whether concupiscence, pride, imprecision, or vagueness, is a minotaur ready to devour beauty. So this idea of beauty is something you're fascinated by, is what he's referring to when Gerd and them are delighted.
Mm-hmm.
They are fascinated,
right, because,
by new effects.
Right, and in the sense that the in McLuhan's definition of the imagination, it's detached or not affected by the senses. So if you become seduced by the sensory happenings around you, you are no longer in a detached place of the imagination.
Right. And it's interesting that that would be, in the end, the same program as LaRouche. Because McLuhan is asking you, via senses, to not to be fooled by the senses,
mm-hmm.
whereas LaRouche uses non-senses to get you not to be fooled by the senses.
Right.
You see? Interesting parallel there.
Yeah.
Now, McLuhan is not a Puritan trying to discourage sensory involvement, enjoyment of the senses. He certainly was for that. But in terms of communication and being the hero artist or a serious artist who's questioning the underpinnings of a society and pointing out the hidden grounds so that other confusions and violences and Donnybrooks are evoked, he wants to throw light on why people are being fooled. And with the electric environment, you can look across the whole spectrum of human institutions and activities and see a pattern and see the hidden cause, including the wars that are evoked, so that he doesn't get involved in any particular activity when he's playing the role of the serious hero artist or someone providing an anti-environment so he can elicit real creativity from this live midden heap.
Mm-hmm. Then this last phrase here, it is the discovery of the, quote, world that has created camp. It is the same discovery of the, quote, world that has created camp.
Yeah, the camp puts on all the old artifacts, which was the world, which was actually old media, and puts them in quotes. And Gerd Stern, they're putting the world, or different old artifacts, on the stage. It's a discovery expressed differently, but the same discovery.
What's an example of a Gerd happening?
Gerd was famous.
First of all, who were the people that were doing happenings? There was Gerd and what other artists
the most
were?
Famous is Alan Kaprow, I think, K-A-P-R-O-W. Klaus Oldenburg, what's his name, Klaus Oldenburg? He did them. A lot of the artists did them. And now the factory, Warhol's factory, was kind of an ongoing happening in a different form. It wasn't just presented as theater. It just was a place that people could go to and create their scene. But main ones are Alan Kaprow, Klaus, is it Robert Rauschenberg, maybe Rauschenberg, Klaus Oldenburg, I don't know if I got that right, I forget his name, Olden something. They were all the famous, a lot of the pop artists were involved in the happenings, what is known as pop artists.
So what did they do, set up an environment that was sort of an art palace or something, and you would go in to see the art and discover that you were becoming part of it or something?
Yeah, they were actually quite messy environments. Klaus Oldenburg he had a place down on the Lower East Side. It's just like a shop, and you'd go into it, and there were environments set up. You'd probably Google them, go on and look at images of them. You would go in there and expect to see a show, and you would end up being, maybe paint was thrown on you.
Mm.
I mean, Nam June Paik, he put on a piano performance. This was in the late 50s. It's not a happening, but it's the same kind of breaking down the audience, spectator and artist barrier.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
He would, in the middle of his pounding on the piano, or whatever he was doing with the piano, he went over and had some scissors, and he went over and clipped off John Cage's tie, who was sitting in the audience.
Uh-huh.
So Cage was like his mentor. So he kind of involved Cage that way.
Uh-huh. Right.
Here it is, Claes Oldenburg. Yep. You can look him up.
Right.
Oldenburg or Berg.
Right.
Anyways, the, let's see, so, what's her name, Carol Schliemann, she did a lot of performance pieces, like performance art. Happenings later became considered a performance, largely done by solo people in the late 60s, and then group effects, but the happening mutated, I would say, under the satellite effect. The first happenings were an effect of TV, and that would be group involvement, but then as the digital environment started to come in and people were more isolated and Rumpelstiltskins and they could hijack the whole global environment, then the happenings became solo performance pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But what's your point here?
I wonder if we would, if we might consider like some of these reality shows like Survival being sort of happening type installations. They recruit these people to go on an island and then they set up some kind of a survival situation, and then these people have to participate in sort of real life survival strategies to figure out, you know, how to make it from one day to the next without the you know comforts of life.
Okay, the Survivor shows the exact opposite of Happenings. Happenings celebrates spontaneity.
Mm-hmm.
The Survivor reality TV shows are programmed scripts. And, you know, the satellite brought in the programmed environment. The whole globe became a programmed, tetra-managed environment. And as we moved into the post-satellite environment, into total paleolithic, non-communicating chaos, which is what I say we're in now, then the old idea of being a cyborg programmed on a game and rules became an art form.
Right.
So they actually, that's why some people don't like them, right? They look rather, they say they're fake.
Yeah. Well, there's room within the programmed environment for spontaneity. That's why people tune in. They want to see what's going to happen next when people are given certain set of constrictions that they have to abide by and a certain amount of freedom that they also have. And so, in playing the game, unique situations occur.
Okay. The way you look at that is, as the satellite was bringing in the program environment, and what you have during the 60s under the satellite environment, huge liberation movements of all kinds, civil rights, women's lib, students, sexual liberation, drug liberation movements, all these things, and other countries had other kinds of movements. You had Third World Revolutions, you had Che Guevara, you had Mao Zedong. All this liberatory enthusiasm was happening, yet the satellite mandated a programmed environment, the CIA control of the word that makes a market. That was not seen. That was a hidden environment. So everybody interpreted the new 60s scenario as celebrating improvisation and offered improvisation as a cultural value. The great thing about happening, supposedly, was that new surprising things would happen. Well, by the 70s and 80s, people realized there was a programmed environment and started to adapt to it. It's called the Reagan era. And actually, we're moving out of a programmed era. So in this non-programmed era we're in now, non-communication, non-matching, you have a celebration of the 70s and 80s period when we had a programmed environment. So the ground of the survival things is, of course, you know, happenstance can occur within it. But the point is, you're told what to do. Every day you get new rules, new games,
mm-hmm.
new competitions. You didn't get that in the happening. They allowed anything to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you're beginning, it's a given, to have a programmed, rule-based situation in the survival or reality TV competition. And then what evokes what kind of new variations on a theme happen within that program situation.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's the opposite.
Right.
And we could say that the new, that everybody's fascinated, like you're saying, they're watching what new developments happen within the program script. That is all that everybody's fascinated with today. We know we're in a program ritualized society. We turn on the news to see what chaos has happened. What surprising element. Remember, McLuhan defined the global theater of the satellite as an era where you expect the unexpected. The global theater of the absurd, where the unexpected is anticipated. You see?
Mm-hmm.
That has now become norm, and that's what you present in the reality TV stuff.
Right.
So, we're going to get into another level of McLuhan coming up, and what time do we have left? 10 minutes?
10 minutes.
Okay, so let's go into the next quote. One thing about this last sentence that you just read is it is the same discovery of the world, quote, that has created camp. McLuhan puts world in quotes because that's more like the chemical body world or just the TV body world, not aware of the real world, which is the beginning of the chip body growth. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So what people think of the world is actually the previous world.
Mm-hmm.
When people say, well, what's the world say? What's the world telling us? Think of what they mean by the word world. They mean what they absorb in news, what they absorb driving around in their various media artifacts, their cars. That's their world, right? The world of second nature.
Mm-hmm. Right, and that world is within a larger matrix, which isn't generally perceived.
Yeah, well, it started to be perceived in the last few years, and the Matrix movie showed that. And maybe the Wachowski brothers' following movie, V for Vendetta, I haven't seen it yet, but people think that's about our time, or the Bush era, the Orwellian, in quotes, world, similar to the Matrix, I guess. The chip body has now become noticed.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the 60s, the growth of in the 70s, the chip body was not noticed, or its effects weren't noticed.
Yeah. Well, now that, yeah, so, yeah. Well,
it's like Philip K. Dick.
Yeah.
Philip K. Dick is responding to maybe the TV body.
Yeah.
Well, some think it's the satellite hologram world, but and so he becomes normal awareness in the 90s, and they make his movies, celebrate his movies, because it's camp now. It's old stuff. But
right.
It's presented as, hey, this guy seemed to be telling us about the present.
Yeah. Well, the computer is the ultimate programmed machine, so it would make sense that as the chip body was coming into its own, that we were coming into a programmed environment. And that you're saying now that we're getting out of a programmed environment is pretty strong evidence that the chip is getting smaller and smaller, the chip body.
Yeah, and the you'll hear on Art Bell's Coast to Coast with George Norrie every night the Joycean theme that every move is your next, and there's the fear of what the next move is going to be, you know, is exaggerated in a post-chip, post-program world. Every night there's a guest on talking about apocalypse or Armageddon in various forms, the nature, according to the Bible, according to nanotechnology, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They just keep doing an inventory of expecting the worst cataclysm, and that's a popular expression. That's a modern happening, so
right.
to speak, where they think the world is going to disappear.
Yeah, what it means is that see, when it's programmed, it's under control. It's under it
yeah.
can be controlled. But when you don't know what to expect next, then there's no more programming.
You have the age of terror.
Mm-hmm.
And the military interprets the age of terror as a bunch of Al Qaeda Islamic fascists. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's their projection of the age of terror. But there's all kinds of other terror landscapes or memes surfacing that people are dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And George Norrie is a good inventory of all the different kinds.
Yeah. Well, I heard a guy who kind of made sense to me. He was he was a political candidate guy saying that it's a whole misnomer, fighting terrorism. The whole concept is a misnomer to begin with, but it's propped up for a reason.
Well, it's propped up by the military hardware as doing their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And because America is largely a military hardware culture, you know, it's dynamic and kinetic, that's its bias. It's projecting its version of the future or of the cause of terror over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And because they can control the content, it seems to be global, but there's all kinds of reactions by all kinds of other cultures in different ways to this strange future that's dawning this uncontrolled future.
Well, you can't fight terror. It's fighting terror is like throwing fuel on the flames.
Well, you can't, but the military can. That's the military's job, is to fight terror.
Yeah.
They're carrying out their ritual. Yeah. It's not to do with us. They're an institution.
The more you engage in fighting terror, terror being a fight in and of itself, the more you induce terror.
Well, that's someone. That's the opinion of someone not in the military, not engaged in the military meme.
Yeah.
But the military meme is a huge historical process. You know, it goes back thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
It came out of visual space and what we call civilization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the patriarchal military situation. McClung called it the military bureaucracies versus the temple bureaucracies. Temples were pre-civilized, pre-literate, pre-militaristic.
Mm-hmm.
Harold Innes writes about the difference between the time-bound temple bureaucracies and the space-bound military bureaucracies.
Temple,
so you have a battle today.
You're referring to temple as in religion?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
High priestly.
Yeah.
Artifacts. So, in a way, the Islamic culture is retrieving the temple bureaucracy, and they're ferociously engaged with the military bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they all get mixed up and involved with each other because they're inside a larger flux and flow of digital chip bodies, and TV bodies, and chemical bodies, and astral bodies. So to get an average register of what humans in American culture think, you tune into George Norrie and you'll hear those kind of projections, including being an abductee.
Yeah.
Those are popular translations of the new happening.
Right, and the ingression of ghosts into this dimension, and spirits, and